Okay, there are three tasks at hand, only two of which are actually mentioned in the syllabus. There's a preparatory step so that we can be able to do next week's exercise, the final exercise. So, even though it doesn't say it on the syllabus, I need you to go to the PDF, the PGLO PDF Part 2, or the GFP PDF, whatever it's called, the Part 2 one, though. And all you need to do on that are the four steps that are on pages 29 and 30. And it's pretty easy. You're just scooping up one colony from each of two plates and putting them into a correctly labeled tube that you have over here. Okay, all these tubes are the same, but you need to label them appropriately so they're different from each other, but you also need to label them with your group and with my name and the time, okay? Once you have the tubes made, just put them back. Don't put them back if they're unlabeled or someone else is going to think they're not used yet. But that's it for that part. Pretty straightforward. Except if you don't have any colonies on the appropriate kinds of plates, your plates are up here to retrieve. Hopefully you do all have colonies, but if you don't have any, just, this one's getting kind of sparse. There's one up here for the LB Amp ARA. A couple colonies left if you don't have one on your LB Amp ARA plate. There aren't any LB Amp non-ARA plates up here, except for your fellow groups. So, like I said, all you need is one colony. If you have plenty, just let someone who needs one know you have some to spare. So that's pretty easy, that part. Another task is to finish last week's stuff, which is really just a matter of photographing your gel. Your gels are up here. You need to put them onto a light table, any of the light tables over on Jan's desk, and take a picture of it. That's really all you need to do here to finish up the questions on that. You're supposed to do some calculations using some graph paper, so you can either take a copy of this semi-log paper, or there's plenty of, if you just search for semi-log paper online, you can get even better copies of it. But take a piece of graph paper if you need to. Your raw data, though, are done in terms of being here when you take your picture. You can finish the rest of it at home. And so that leaves the third task, which is the folding exercise. Now, how many did not obey the instructions to print that PDF out and bring it? No delinquents? That's good. We do have some extra copies if you're just not admitting that you're delinquent. But you'll need to do this individually. Cut this thing out carefully. Play nicely with the tape, because there's four dispensers of tape total. But it shouldn't get too contentious if you share. The hardest part is actually folding it properly. It's actually a little bit more of a bitch than it would seem to be, but just by following the picture instructions. But if you do it correctly, then you should end up with something that looks like the final picture on that. If it doesn't look like that, you've done it incorrectly. But by playing around with it, you should be able to figure it out. Most people do. That's another thing you should take a picture of for your notebook. That's raw data, basically. Okay? That's it as far as activities. So I just want to talk about why we're doing this folding exercise. It's really to give you a better appreciation of or understanding of levels of protein structure and how important those are to function, right? Any protein has whatever its function is because of its particular shape. And that's why maintaining that shape is so important. This is why we don't want pH or temperature to get out of range, right? Because if you perturb either of those variables, you're going to change the shape of proteins. When you change the shape of proteins, which do all the important jobs in cells, they no longer work, and therefore you no longer live. So even though this should be, at this point, automatic thinking in your brain, let's go over it again, the four levels of protein structure. What are they called, first of all? Yeah, those words just mean first, second, third, and fourth, right? Importantly, secondary, tertiary, and quaternary structure, if applicable, all come from primary structure. Primary structure, in other words, determines all the other levels. What is primary structure? Right, it is the specific amino acid sequence and length for a single polypeptide. Polypeptides vary from each other, of course. But the way they vary from each other in primary structure is how many amino acids there are total, right? Different polypeptides have different lengths, perhaps. They're not all the same length, I mean. They also vary in which amino acids are used. It's not the same amino acids that are used just in different combinations. There are different individual amino acids that are used. And also they differ in what the actual sequence is. So that's what the primary structure is. It's the specific sequence of amino acids that make up that single polypeptide. And what I was saying before is that specific sequence determines all the other levels of structure. Because that sequence is going to chemically define a lowest energy possibility. There's different ways a polypeptide can fold up. But there's one that is favored because of energetics. And mistakes are made all the time, by the way. When that polypeptide is made, it might misfold. Happens fairly often. In which case, it's scrapped, dismantled for raw materials, the amino acids it's made out of, and you go back to the drawing board, which is really the gene, right? So, in terms of information, the DNA is carrying the information originally. The gene that codes for that protein, assuming it's a protein coding gene, that is holding the information originally. That information is transferred in the process of transcription to another information-carrying molecule, right? The messenger RNA itself. DNA's job is done at that point. Messenger RNA is carrying the information. That's one type of RNA that's used in translation, but it's going to meet up with what organelle in order for translation to occur. Translation occurs where? On a ribosome. So ribosome is made up of protein and ribosomal RNA, a second kind of RNA involved in the translation process. And what type of RNA brings in the individual amino acids? Transfer RNA, tRNA, correct. So there are three different RNA types of molecules that are involved in translation, but the one carrying the information is messenger RNA. Once the polypeptide is formed, which is the final product of translation, even though that might not be the final step in the overall protein formation, when that polypeptide is assembled with the correct sequence of amino acids, now that polypeptide is holding the information. And the ribosome has no idea what that final shape is going to be. It doesn't care, of course. That shape is going to be determined by what the actual sequence of amino acids is, for chemical and energetic reasons. So what is secondary... what's the word? Secondary structure. What does secondary structure refer to? Yeah, some repeating themes that occur in three dimensions but don't determine the overall three-dimensionality of it. And so the beta-pleated sheets and alpha helices occur in many different kinds of polypeptides. So secondary structure refers to how many alpha helices, how many beta-pleated sheets, where they are, and also what kind of turns come between the helices and sheets. Tertiary structure refers to the overall three-dimensional shape of a single polypeptide. And for some proteins, that's where it ends, right? Because some proteins are made up of just one polypeptide. And if that's true, then protein and polypeptide are interchangeable terms. They mean the same thing at that point. But of course, there are other proteins that have quaternary structure in addition to primary, secondary, and tertiary. What kind of proteins have quaternary structure? Well, that is an example, but what is the word that denotes the category of proteins, all of which have quaternary structure? That describes them. That describes them, but there's a word. Multimeric. A multimeric protein is one that is made up of multiple polypeptides. Now notice the word multimeric with that mer part, which means part, is also in polymer, right? Polymer and multimer really mean the same thing. Except poly means many and multi means more than one, not necessarily a hell of a lot. Okay? So, in a multimeric protein, it's really made up of multiple polymers. Each polypeptide is itself a polymer in its own right, a molecule in its own right. And so when those are brought together, the overall three-dimensional shape of the fit between its constituent polypeptides is what we call quaternary structure, and that applies only to multimeric proteins. And if that's true, if you have a multimeric protein, then protein and polypeptide no longer are synonymous, right? Polypeptide just refers to one subunit of the multimeric protein. Protein refers to the overall thing. Now, we also use other terminology to narrow down what kind of multimeric protein we have. For instance, we can put a numerical prefix before the root mer to indicate how many polypeptides there are. You can have a dimer, a trimer, a tetramer, and so on, right? Hemoglobin, which you mentioned, is an example of what? How many are in it? How many polypeptides? There are four polypeptides in a single hemoglobin, and therefore a hemoglobin is an example of a tetramer. So that's one way we can specify a multimeric protein, is by specifying the number of polypeptides. But we can also use two other prefaces, or one of two others, either homo or hetero. What does homo mean? Same, and hetero means different. And that's because if you have a multimeric protein, yes, it has multiple polypeptides, but they might just be copies of each other. If that's true, then you have, for instance, a homodimer, if it's two polypeptides that are copies of each other, a homotrimer, a homotetramer. Anything that is a homo-whatever-mer only requires one gene to code for it, right? Because a gene is going to specify one polypeptide, but you just make multiple copies of that to make up the multimeric protein. But hemoglobin is not that way. There are four polypeptides, so it is a tetramer, but it's a heterotetramer because there are two different polypeptides, two copies of each of those two. So there's two alpha globins and two beta globins that make up one overall hemoglobin. And that's why to make a complete hemoglobin protein, which is multimeric, requires two different genes, right? A gene for the alpha peptide, polypeptide, and one for the beta. Okay, so the point of all this shape importance is that shape determines the function. And that's why when we've totally denatured GFP, which is the protein you're modeling by doing the folding exercise, when we totally denatured it, got rid of its shape entirely, it no longer glowed. It no longer did its function. Same is true for any other protein, whether it's an enzyme, a structural protein, a hormone, whatever. Okay, so fold this thing up nicely, take a picture, do the other stuff I said, and you're done.